This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Oftentimes, sensitivity to the paranormal is looked at as being hereditary, if it's ever talked about. That's the thing. Sometimes family members are totally open to this, and sometimes they're not, even if they're something they experience on a daily basis. Sometimes it's just not discussed because it's kind of one of those things. That's where it comes time at some point in life to at least try and have those discussions with our loved ones that are around us, especially loved ones who are older than us, who are likely not going to be around as long as us. And then at some point, you may be that one being asked those questions by the younger ones in your family. But being open and being able to discuss those things, I think, does a lot for those people who can have those conversations. Validity adds a sense of, you know, family, if you will, that you're not alone, that others in your bloodline share those same somewhat unexplained gifts. And I say gifts with a question mark because sometimes it can be looked at as a curse. In our next story, we hear about a family that has quite a few encounters. We're going to hear about four different encounters when some of the family members were alive and when they even returned from the dead to continue helping their family get along. Take a listen. My grandmother, or Tutu as we say in Hawaii, was the center of our entire family. Around 50 close relatives and 250 extended relatives, to be exact. She's always been the center of my life, and there's not a single day that goes by that I don't think of her, even 17 years after her death. She was of pure Hawaiian descent, and growing up with her as a child was supernatural in the biggest sense. I have many stories to share, all of them entirely true, and I'll tell them to the best of my ability. All of them are deeply rooted in Hawaiian culture and spiritual beliefs, so please read this with an open mind. I've contemplated whether it was right to share this, but I find that this is my opportunity to share her with the world. She had many experiences in her lifetime, which I have been gathering from family members, but these are stories I've had the honor to experience. I'll do my best to keep them short. If I need to clarify anything, I will. Story number one. It was 1991 when I was just 5 years old. An Akualea, or fireball, visited our home. Being so young at the time, I can only remember bits and pieces, but they have been validated by other family members who were there that night. My Tutu and I were sitting in the living room watching television. This also served as her bedroom. There were beds all over the house, as from time to time relatives would come to stay or sleep for the night. It was one of those dial-switch TVs with only 7 channels. My older cousin was in his bedroom, which was near the living room. Suddenly, I heard my cousin yelling from my grandma. He runs into the living room. Tutu, what is that? He points out the window, which was behind the TV. I sat up and went to the window and peeked in between. What I saw, I could never forget. A ball of fire was moving above the mango trees in our backyard. It was literally gliding over the trees and towards the windows. Remember how bright it was. It had a long black tail trailing behind with sparks of red flickering around it. It was big and it was loud. Never seeing something like this before, I thought it had come from the sky. As it got closer, I felt the hands of my grandma wrap around my chest as she pulled me away from the window. Her voice filled with raspiness, she shouts, "Akalili," and yells to my cousin to grab the salt. "Go now." My cousin runs to the kitchen, grabs a big bag of Hawaiian salt, begins throwing it out the bag, and we're feeling the big rocks hitting the back of my legs. I slid behind my grandma as the fireball begins ducking back and forth between the two windows, as if it were trying to get a look at us. Next thing I remember is her cursing at the thing in Hawaiian. She shouts louder and louder and louder until the thing stops and explodes right in front of my eyes. It was just one loud pop, and it was gone. Years later, my cousin and I were recalling the story. He explains to me that this thing was sent to us from another Hawaiian family who lived further down the road. The grandmother of their family was jealous of my grandmother, as we had recently obtained more land to expand our coffee farm. What I didn't remember was that I fell deathly ill for the next 2 days, and my grandmother only left my side once to go talk to the family so they could come to an agreement. After giving offerings and sharing each other's breath, she returned home to find her granddaughter alive and well, as if I were never sick at all. And then there's story number two. The Omakouch that saved my uncle. This happened in the year 1995, when I was just 9 years old. The best thing about where I lived, which was in Captain Cook, South Kona, was that many of my family lived on the same road. I had a girl cousin who lived a five-minute walk from our home, past my uncle and aunt's house, and through a grove of banana trees and thick elephant grass. I'd spend the night there a lot. She was like my best friend. One night, I arrived there as the sun was going down. She was outside on her front porch crying. Her sister was draped over her body, and they were consoling each other over something. I ran up to her and asked what was wrong, and she says, "It's my dad. He's sick." Went up the stairs, and he was about to enter the living room when my aunt peeked her head out of their bedroom door, warning me to stay outside. I began to cry, as any child my age would do in an unknown situation as this. I asked what was wrong, but could already hear the moans and wails coming out of my uncle's lips. His father was a Filipino man, and he was sitting on his usual rocking chair, this time holding a bowl in his two hands, hovering over it, examining it. I went to him to examine it myself. As I passed the walkway into the living room, I peeked into my uncle's room. My auntie was wringing out a towel over his head, the bed sheets covered in sweat. He was not moving, barely breathing. His father was holding a bowl of water. In the bottom of the bowl was a thin layer of raw white rice. He points to the two flecks of rice floating at the top of the water. "Oh no, no good. No can help my boy," he says in his constant broken English. He looks up to finally notice that I was there. He grabs my arms tight as if to show me that I need to listen now with utmost importance. "Go to your tutu. Bring her now, my boy. Going, make." I ran back towards our house. I remember feeling the feeling of my lungs ripping out of my chest. I ran into the living room and called out to my grandma, "Tutu, come. It's Uncle Dickie." I ran back outside as my grandmother gets up. She takes a machete, chops down a bundle of leaves. My grandfather starts up the work truck as we take off towards my cousin's house. My grandmother goes in the living room. My Filipino uncle stays silent. I remember sitting outside with my cousins, trying to console them in their grief. We sat on the side of the porch, our legs dangling between the railings. I could hear my uncle muttering in tongues as my grandmother prayed for something to come. A spiritual guardian to manifest into an animal. Every person of Hawaiian descent knows what this relates to in their bloodline, and I'm sure many have had a story to tell of when they have come to provide aid. Yes, it's true. It would become true to me now. As we were wiping the tears from our eyes, just a moment to breathe back the sobs, I heard a screech. In front of her house was an unpaved road. There was just one street light over the telephone wires running down the side of the road. I looked towards the direction of the screech, and I could see a small shadow flying towards the telephone wires. I tapped on my cousin's shoulders and begged her to look. It was a Hawaiian owl, Pleo. It perched up on the wire and just looked at us. All three of us were caught in a trance, and a feeling of calm swept over me. That's when another one came and perched right beside the first one. "Well, that's odd. They spend their lives in solitude. Maybe they were a pair." Just as soon as the second one came, another one comes. And another. Two sets of two. What a sight to see, I thought. During what was happening at that moment, we found happiness. She begins to giggle a little as she gets up to tell her mom what was happening. Just as soon as she gets up to turn around, she lets out a small sigh. We look up to see that her head had bumped into her father's chest. He holds his daughter in his arms, and as she begins to scream, "Baby, what is it? What are y'all staring at?" We stared at him, our eyes as big as ever. As we turned around to look back at the telephone wire, the owls were gone. My uncle says to us, "Don't worry, I saw them too." "But how? It's been half an hour ago. We thought he was doomed for death." He tells his family, "I saw them in my dream. Up there on that telephone wire, yeah?" I look deep into the eyes of one, and that's when I woke up. "What is it? Why are you all still staring at me?" We didn't know what to say. And then there's this, my grandmother's funeral. I apologize in advance for bringing out two great stories just to hit you with the inevitable fact that my grandmother's life came to an end. It was the biggest tragedy in my life, and for some reason I can't come to grips with it. Maybe it's because she's still with me. She was a caretaker and main figure of my family. And that didn't end in her death, if that makes you feel any better. Or maybe it confuses you. Well, it was 1999, the month of March, when my tutu had passed. My grandfather had died just 2 months earlier. She died of a broken heart, no reason to live anymore. Her funeral services were held at our local church. I spent the whole time next to her, open coffin, just waiting for her to move, to say something. "Please wake up, tutu. I still need you," I say. The church was packed to the ceiling. So many relatives, so many friends. She meant everything to everyone. The only one I noticed that wasn't there was my uncle, my father's brother. It was just the two of them with a string of Hanai, or adopted brothers and sisters who would carry out the coffin at the end of the ceremony. We were trapped in eternity during the service, but I begged it not to stop. The casket was finally closed, and all the Hawaiian aunts and uncles wept, as it was custom to cry loud enough for the heavens to hear. The men in the family all took their places at the coffin and lifted my grandmother off the frame, all with one spot left vacant. They walked down the small stairs and through the short walkway to the hearse. My father was at the back, my mother, sister, brother, and I were right behind at the front of the line. As soon as his foot left the sacred area of the chapel, I saw my uncles buckle as they dropped the coffin to the ground. They began looking at each other, finding a time to laugh, saying, "Come on, Brash. No, get weak on me now." They stooped back down to pick up the coffin. I literally watched five of the strongest men in my entire family struggling to pick up my grandmother. Cries and whispers start floating around the chapel as they attempt over and over to raise her coffin off the ground. It would not move. They could not move her. My father explained that the coffin was heavier than blue rock. My father and uncle leaned down at the front of the coffin and peek open the door that was to be forever closed. I could hear my father talking to his mother, "Ma, it's time to go. What are you waiting for?" As they continued pleading with my dead grandmother, I heard the rumbling of an engine racing up the driveway of the church. It was my uncle, late as usual. Even to his own mother's funeral, real Hawaiian time, as we would say. He puts on his white gloves, kneels in front of the pastor, apologizing for his tardiness. For what he was late for, I don't know, but as he took his place at the coffin, across from my father, they lifted the coffin once again. This time, my grandmother's coffin floated off the ground, light as a feather, they said. As they walked another 15 or so steps to the hearse, they said it was as if my grandmother floated to the car. Even in her death, she was still as strong as ever, refusing to leave this world without her two boys by her side to lead her to the next world. I still need a moment to cry. And there's a fourth chapter to my story. My grandmother and grandfather hear my father's plea for help. As I said before, her guardianship does not end in her death. Quite comforting, yeah? This took place 2 years after my grandparents had passed. This one involves my father and mother, and every time he tells the story, the facts never change. My parents had gone to Hilo for the weekend on the other side of the island. We have family in other areas that they would visit from time to time. But anyway, my father and mother decided to spend the night at the Hilo Seaside Hotel right down the road. My father himself, being half Hawaiian and half Filipino, had always had a sixth sense. Sometimes it was a nightmare. It started that way that night. It was around 2:30 in the morning and they were sleeping in room 102 in a queen-size bed. The room was small. The door to the room was really close to the bed. If you open the door and walk to the right, it leads you down a flight of stairs across a small garden area through a swinging gate and smack dab into the middle of the parking lot. My father was being visited once again by a choking ghost. This has happened to him on many occasions in his life, but as he tells me to this day, it was one of his last encounters. As the clock read 2:36 a.m., he's woken up by a feeling of fear in the pit of his stomach. You can see a shadow forming at the foot of the door. The shadow leaks under the crack of the door and up the door onto the ceiling. He began rubbing his eyes to adjust to the darkness. The tint of yellow light coming through the sliding glass door on the other side of the bed. My mother was sound asleep. He thought for a second of waking her. As he looked closer and closer at the shadow, it began to take the shape of a woman. Only the shape was that of a gecko crawling on the wall. The arms and legs bent out and away from the center of the body. He was disgusted at this thing as it began crawling on the ceiling, making its way above the bed. As soon as it's hovering over my father, it drops from the ceiling and lands on his chest. This womanly creature had a face, he said, a horrible face with a slithering tongue. Wraps its legs around my father's stomach and hands, grasping his arms, holding him down to the bed. He was frozen in fear as he attempted to wake my mother from her sleep. My mother is of Caucasian descent, so she was usually not as affected by these things as my father was. The womanly creature stares directly into his eyes. He says it was just grinning at him as he began to feel his throat tighten and his esophagus lock up. He was gasping for breath as he tried his best to get the thing off. The creature began shrieking as he was slipping in and out of consciousness. He said he felt as if he was taking his last breath when suddenly the front door swings open. There was another shadow standing inside the frame of the door. As it walked into the room, the yellow light hit the face of my grandmother. He hears his mother shout, "Aol! Math K! You cannot have my son." She begins cursing at the thing. Even though the thing was still on my father's chest, he was bewildered at the fact that his dead mother was standing in front of him, as if her flesh were still real. There was a bright light coming from behind her. As my grandmother continued to curse and curse at the thing in Hawaiian, it finally let off and scampered off, dissipating into the sliding glass door. My father could not take his eyes off of his mother, but she does not say a word to him, just stares at him for a few seconds, smiling. She turns around and walks out of the room and out the door of their hotel room. This is when my mother wakes up. Even if you were to put my parents into a separate room, they would recall the story the same. My mother joins my father at the door, asking him what was going on. My dad was staring down the corridor where the stairs were. That's when my mother's eyes focused on my grandmother, who was still walking. She walked down the steps, past the garden. She looked alive as ever. No more limping, no more pains as she walked. She walked out the swinging gate into the parking lot. That's when they realized that she was walking to a car parked at the corner, facing out towards the front street of the hotel. Brake lights were glowing red, but he could make out the blue bumper of his father's 62 Mazda. In the reflection of the rearview mirror, he could see his father's face. He was right there, sitting in the driver's seat of the car. They watched as my grandmother approached the car, saying to him, "Okay, Papa, we go now. Our boy's okay." He gets into the passenger seat and they remember watching the glowing of the brake lights as the car disappeared into the darkness. So there you have it. I thank anyone who took the time to hear this. Hope this gave you an ounce of insight into the wonderful woman that my grandmother is, and insight into the wonderful people that I come from. And if you still have the fortune of having them here in this world right now, don't take another second for granted. Because with them, they take our past, our tradition, and our inherent right to be proud of who we are. Please take this chance to ask them as much as you can and jot it down to share with the rest of the world before it's gone.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. GhostPodcast.com or Patreon.com/RealGhostStories.